This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Webb Conference in Austin, 2011.
My name is Dan Fremmelt. I'm the Director of Applications and Development at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. We wanted to do a session today on an approach that we took for an open source CMS. We partnered with CompuNet in this regard, and they're to help us with the project management, organizing the technology, getting the process flow going, taking care of a lot of the details. And my job with this particular project was to orchestrate the RFP process. And I can tell you, having never been through an RFP before, that was hell. It's definitely something I learned an awful lot, but I don't ever want to do it again. And unfortunately, I'm the only one at the university who has done one in the last 10 years. So unfortunately, I'll be saddled for a whole bunch more. In that regard, I was able to get a team of people to work full-time on this web project. So I'll introduce my team here, and then we'll kind of let them go from there. I've got John Veith. He is our web designer. And Mike Steffel, he's our web programmer. I'm very grateful to have these two gentlemen working with us. And from CompuNet, we've got TJ Carter and Amber Arora is right up front here. So I'll turn it over to these guys, and they're the ones doing the hard work anyway.
And I will add real quickly, the RFP took actually longer than getting the site done. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through kind of before the after, a lot of the dynamics that were driving this site, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Drupal, why Drupal, and then into some of the migration challenges in there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the background and where we were and kind of trying to go from a high level. So the first thing is where we started. Over the years, the Platteville site kind of grew in what I'm calling an unfettered fashion, you know, organically. There was really no brand standards to guide look and feel. There were no formal objectives or expectations from above to drive and help them make decisions of what should be done. Technically, there were a bunch of CGI apps bolted around a static HTML core and some FTP and all kinds of incredibly creative things. There was WordPress site in there, and a bunch of sites were actually put off into the cloud, cloud-based apps, Alumni Nation, and that kind of stuff. So it was, I think, four or five different external things that were out there at that point. The web development office at that point was, I think, just Dan and students. Okay, there were a staff of 10 students. Now we do have the two full-time guys, and the students are still there too. And there was really no process to manage the site, you know, because there were no expectations, no real process there. You know, what got done, and again, in ad hoc fashion, depending on who might yell the loudest and that kind of thing. So it was a bit of a chaotic environment, and it grew over time into, you know, quite an impressive site of over, 100,000 pages. 101 templates, no standards. So again, you see up here everything from this black radio station, kind of who knows what that is, to Alumnation off in the cloud, and bright orange headers. It really was hard sometimes to understand, am I really at the UW Platteville site? Okay, and this is pretty typical with a lot of university websites these days. Existing system landscape was, again, we show five things living in the cloud, a bunch of different servers doing all kinds of different things. It really is pretty impressive on how it all came together over the course of time. But obviously, tough to maintain, a lot of areas that, of failure and whatnot. Six servers, 3 to 4 separate OSs, 5 hosted services. Not something when we look at IT operations that, the operations team was really thrilled about. They like a little more consistency, a little more consolidation, and whatnot. So again, it room for improvement. Information architecture, okay? Because it grew as it did, and I'm just highlighting if you follow the red circles and the green circles, we could do that in the other areas too. Different, content was spread in different areas depending upon who kind of felt like putting things in there. So current students were in multiple different places. It was a very difficult information architecture, and what it led to was, an A to Z directory, and that didn't help a ton either. And then search that was kind of random in how it brought back results. So again, it wasn't something that was intuitive and easy to get to the information you wanted. The goal then, a new chancellor came into town, and this chancellor wants to double the enrollment in the university. And he really wants to try to, you know, get a consistent message out there, because it's pretty important if you're out there doing some formal marketing that you can build a brand and reinforce that brand. So really, the goal here was what we're calling a transformative redesign. We wanted a consistent look and feel aligned with the brand strategy for all sites, in capital bolded all. Okay, this isn't an academic site. This isn't a sports site. This is UW-Platteville. If it's www.uwplatteville.edu, it's going to be in this structure. Okay, and this only happens with the leadership. We really wanted to bring in a state-of-the-art platform that's going to evolve and serve the foreseeable needs. Because today, it's not just a website. It's what we call a horizontal kind of platform that's going to serve as internet capability. It's going to start to reinforce with some workflow processes, kind of serve as a mashup platform for different apps and information at times. So we needed to have that ability to evolve and grow after that first release got out of there. We wanted to establish and transfer ownership of content out of the web office. You know, just the web office was taking, you know, requests to build pages or edit pages. And in today's world of CMSs, we know that's not the way it needs to be. We wanted people to own their content. Of those 100,000 pages, you know, there was so many pages that were orphaned. You know, was it stale? Was it good? Was it pertinent? You know, nobody knew anymore. So with that, you know, real solid ownership concept is something we wanted to put in place. That helps us change the role of the web office. You know, why have students doing content updates when students can actually go and develop new modules? Maybe they can do integrations. Maybe they can, you know, they can add real business value, as we would say, in the work they do. We had to clearly cleanse content, you know, the content that was crazy. And then, last and not least, it's probably one of the most important parts of it, we wanted to institutionalize the stewardship processes, okay? We started, in our consulting terminology, we called that governance. What we found out is there's a governance process in the universities already that deals with academic matters and this, that, and the other stuff, and it confused them. So under, you know, Dan came up with the word stewardship, which I think is brilliant, because, you know, if you're a steward, you're thinking for the good of the whole university, the whole website, not just for your individual needs. And this process to really manage the ongoing evolution of the site. There was a previous session this morning about governance. I mean, it's preaching to the choir. You're not going to maintain a consistent site. You're not going to really get what you need unless you have that in place. All this does take leadership, you know, and it needs to start at the top. So where did we end up, or how did we attack the problem? The first thing is our project structure. We came in and supported pretty much at a high level project management, information architecture. We provided some lead developer resources and help on the technical architecture. Creative design. We don't personally do creative design, you know, but what we did is we matched them up with an organization that does. We're out of Minneapolis, and there's a great wealth of folks out there, so what we do is understand the needs of the client, what they're trying to look for, get a design firm in there. I strongly recommend it. You know, these guys live and think and breathe, you know, what's connecting with people today, what kids want, whatever your demographics are. These guys were really kind of edgy, but they did a lot of Dairy Queen type stuff, so it seemed like a pretty good mix for them. We helped with some migration strategy and change management, because again, this is transforming roles and responsibilities, and that's a pretty big thing to step into. What we did do, though, is we really leveraged the development office, the web development team. John, Mike, and 10 student developers have done an awful lot, if not a vast majority, of the development on this site. And it's really, there's not a lot of customizations. The theming and the look and feel has been customized, but this is largely a out-of-the-box implementation of Drupal modules, okay? So as some people scary about it, you don't need to go hog wild with Drupal and do it if you understand what it can do and shape your solution around it. And I think you'll see the site is quite impressive in how that delivered. And last but not least, we ended up, when we started, we had zero content stewards. When we end up, we have over 150. These are the people that needed to raise their hand and say, I own this page. You know, if they don't own the page, it's not coming, okay? And there needed to be a name against each and every page or it wasn't going to move forward. But it's really important in this case, you know, again, when this site is done, you know, it's not like our guys are throwing something on Platteville, you know, and here, take it. These guys own it. They understand intimately how this thing was put together so that they can take it forward and evolve it over time. It's not something that is going to have a long-term dependency on our resources. So our results real quickly. We ended up with 10 templates, period. Okay. And there's reasons to this. You know, one of the reasons is simply if indeed this is ever going to happen in the future, we want to keep it consistent. You know, it's a lot easier to migrate into a new platform if you've got a fairly consistent set of standards to start with. Coming, you know, we'll talk about migration. It was not an easy process because of where we started. But going forward, we're going to have a lot more consistent architecture and data model underneath it that we can, you know, if and when that happens, follow. From a design consistency perspective, this is just kind of one of the wireframes that drove it. Just to point out that, you know, above the line, you're not going to change a thing. Okay, too key to the information architecture. You know, so it's not going to happen. A lot of complaints. You know, library's not up there anymore. Used to be right on the top. You know, so some people won, some people lost. But again, it really is now driven. We want to put kids in the classroom. You know, this isn't all about finding books in the library anymore. You'll get to the library, you just have to navigate it to it. Down below, though, you've got room for navigation in your own area, page titles, contents, and modules that can be used to customize your content as you need see fit. Modules to begin with, 6 of them. Calendar module, I'll tell you, Drupal Calendar is really, really powerful. You don't need a third-party tool to do that, and John can talk about that more. But a calendar, dates to remember that kind of drive out of there, what's next, which are bunches of links, social feeds, we're starting with, I think, just Facebook, but obviously Twitter and others will be in release 2 of the website as people drive it, as the stewardship process drives need for these things. It won't be done willy-nilly. Contact information, news and announcements, pretty simple, but again, things that the content owner, the steward, can decide to use to, you know, add value to their specific pages as required. Information architecture. You know, you'll see it's very streamlined. We pretty much broke it up into kind of your lifecycle relationship with the university, before, during, surrounding, and after. I joke a lot, if you've been to Platteville, it's actually built around a cemetery, so the after really has some interesting meaning out there. But it's very, very clear, designed for navigation, you know, and very intuitive. You'll see we locked down some sites which are for intranet capability. There is an intranet capability now which they never had before. Again, that's pretty transformative for them, so they can start to deal with internal department-related administrative data that they don't want to make public to the world and information. And now I think I'm going to leave it to John to talk about more of the Drupal piece of it. So, and then Mike will take over and talk about migration. And we can take questions later.
Thanks, TJ. Can everybody hear me all right? Is this thing on? Okay, so why Drupal 7? Listed a few bullets here to just give you a quick rundown, and then I'll talk about each of these in detail. The reason we chose Drupal 7 is because of just a lot of great features that are a perfect match for a large university. Content types, powerful and easy theme engine. Drupal 7 handles very large information architectures very well. Minimal customizations are necessary, although you can customize, but you can build a lot without a lot of crazy customization. And basically with Drupal, for a very large website, if your university can dream it, you can build it with Drupal because of the flexibility and the power. And finally, support and documentation were key compared to other content management systems, which includes proprietary content management systems. So real quick, we'll talk about content types. Content types are a core feature of Drupal 7, and I really feel like Drupal is just really all about content types. And a content type is basically just a type of content. But in Drupal 7, that means that you're building a collection of fields that determine what the editor user interface is when people are editing that type of content. So, and it's just the basically what most of Drupal 7 is centered around. A real important aspect of content types and fields is that fields help control the content and the layout. So you really get to control what your users do by using fields, because with each of these fields, you're prompting them to enter certain pieces of information. And then in the case of image fields and video fields, you're transforming what they upload to make sure that it fits perfectly into the layouts so you don't need to rely on people to be expert at using some sort of WYSIWYG editor and resizing images, because they will never master that, ever. Content stewards, at least, will not. These fields, when you're working with content types, include everything from image fields to video fields, date fields, which are useful for calendaring, file fields, so you can attach files like meeting minutes, which are obviously very prevalent in a university website, and of course, content, HTML content, using fields on which you can apply a WYSIWYG editor for easy editing. Part of all this content type and field stuff is that with Drupal, you can very easily query your content then, just like you can query a database. You can query this content using a feature in Drupal that's called views. So just by clicking around, you can very easily build a view that you can then present as a page or a block in a layout. So it's just very easy to build stuff. And I'm going to just very quickly show you a live demonstration of what I'm talking about when it comes to content types and fields. So here is a content type, and we are in the Manage Fields tab. So it's just, again, a matter of clicking together a bunch of fields of all sorts of different types. Boolean fields to trigger whether something appears or does not appear. Taxonomy fields for choosing what category a piece of content is in. Image fields, video fields, text fields with a WYSIWYG editor. And then once you build that content type, in Drupal 7, you end up with a very nice editor UI where it's just very easy to upload an image if you want to appear, want it to appear in this spot. Upload an image if you want it to appear in this spot. What section does the website belong? You've got your, what you see is what you get editor down there. And Drupal provides you with a lot of flexibility for how you build that what you see is what you get editor. You can control exactly what features people have access to. There's countless what you see is what you get editors you can choose from if you have a favorite, including Yahoo's YUI editor, TinyMCE. We use CK editor, which we feel is the best choice. Very popular with Drupal. So moving on, theming. Another very big reason we chose Drupal 7, theming in Drupal 7 is extremely powerful. With theming in Drupal 7, you can take a flat file, whether it's a Photoshop document or a PDF, and if you have reasonably talented front-end developers, you can transform that into a pixel-perfect rendering in the form of a Drupal 7 theme, and you can really delight your top brass by saying, hey, this is what you approved, and now it looks exactly like what you approved on our Drupal website. In Drupal 7, everything can be themed and customized, so you don't find yourself implementing a theme and getting stuck where this one little piece, you can't make it look like what you want it to. Everything can be overridden. Since everything can be overridden, there's a lot to know, but it's extremely logical and elegant. So with a little bit of learning, you can really make it sing. Very easy to do this. Sub-themes make it easy to get started because you don't have to build a whole theme. You can base your sub-theme off a master theme and just change what's necessary in order to get the job done. We used as our master theme the 960 theme for Drupal, which is based on the 960 grid system CSS framework. And if you're good, near the end, we will show you basically a before and after, what we were given, what was approved for design, and how we implemented it. So try to cover these next ones a little more quickly. Large information architectures, that's really important for a university website. Your CMS really has to be able to tackle large information architectures, and Drupal 7 is excellent for that. If it's good enough for WhiteHouse.gov and Harvard's Open Scholar Project, I feel it's good enough for just about any university. And the reason it really works is because you have very flexible and unlimited menus, which means you can grow your website without constraints. So you can always add more menus, you can have huge menus, you can have multi-level menus with unlimited levels. You can put these menus in all sorts of spots in your layouts, so you're never constrained with, like, how do you build your navigation. You can also keep your menu system very simple if you like, too, so it doesn't have to be really complicated. Multi-site option reduces management overhead for multi-site universities. If you can't get it all done with one website, Drupal 7's multi-site feature lets you branch out to other websites while still maintaining one code base and one server. And unlimited themes and content types for each website just help you accomplish a very large and sprawling, diverse information architecture. TJ touched a little bit on minimal customization. That's one of the reasons we chose Drupal, because if you know Drupal and you have some experience with Drupal and you know how to build things the Drupal way, you really can click together a huge, very complicated website without really writing a lot of custom code. Drupal lets you build huge custom applications if you want to, but you really don't have to. And we really didn't when we built our very large website, which is about to go live soon here. The reason this is important is because it simplifies future migrations. The more custom code you have to write, the more likely it's going to be very difficult to migrate to something new in the future, for example, Drupal 8 in a few years. So you really can click together a very large website very easily. In our case, we did a lot of customization, but it's not really custom PHP programming. You'll find that a lot of time if you can't get it done with CSS and you have to override a bunch of templates, a lot of times you're just rearranging PHP code so that things happen in a different order, or things that you don't want to happen don't happen. So it really simplifies things and it's easy to document. And a strong API minimizes the need for a lot of custom code, because a lot of the code is written for you. You can just call API functions to get things done. All of this still, I don't want to make it sound like it's really anyone can do it. You do want someone with Drupal expertise. But if someone dives in and builds a Drupal website or two, takes like a boot camp approach and just really embraces Drupal, and they're a technical person, they're going to really be able to make Drupal sing. And you know, you can't be afraid to bring in outside expertise too, but usually if you need Drupal, it's because you have a very complicated website and you really need that. So if you can dream it, you can build it with Drupal. I find with a lot of other CMSs, I'll just use WordPress as an example. I'm a lover of WordPress, but it has limits, and I find that a lot of people do things with WordPress and other simpler CMS where they're basically constrained by what it can do, and they just live within those confines. Whereas with Drupal 7, you can just really think about how you want your website to work and then just go out using Drupal core and contributed modules from the community, figure out how to make it happen, and you will be able to make it happen. Worst case, you write some custom modules or do some customizations, and like I said, in our case, we really minimized the customization that way. And the result is we ended up with, we feel, a cutting-edge Drupal 7 website by doing things this way, the Drupal way, and just really learning how Drupal works and making the most of Drupal. Another really important reason we chose Drupal 7 is support and documentation. The Drupal 7 community at drupal.org is, I feel, unmatched. There's an issue tracker for every module, so if you have a problem, it's going to get attention. You can enter it as an issue. There's extensive documentation, really detailed documentation that's always growing and always evolving, and you can contribute to it very easily. There are discussion forums where you can post questions, and there's also real-time IRC chat. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that 24 hours a day, no matter what time you log into IRC, there's going to be at least a couple hundred people logged into the IRC chat channel. And results vary, but you're probably going to be able to talk to somebody, and I've gotten some pretty good questions answered that way. Massive and growing hordes of Drupal consultants and which we utilized at UW-Platteville. Open source means more options for support, and you can, even though it's open source, you can go commercial with your support options. Acquia is the commercial arm of Drupal. If you want to go high end, you can hire them, and I mean, you're basically hiring the Drupal, the people who built Drupal, to provide support for you. There are also other more intermediate level commercial firms like CompuNet, right down here. They do a fine job. And so that's basically why we chose Drupal 7. I'll tell you just a little bit about our hardware and software implementation. It's a LAMP server. You'll hear a lot of people talk about Drupal and other CMS and say and suggest that, hey, you can use other databases, or hey, you can use a Windows server with IIS. People in the know that it's all about LAMP. It's a good standard LAMP server. Right now we have the equivalent of 4 virtual CPUs in a VMware server virtualized environment with multiple servers for production, QA, testing, and so on. We have, in the testing phase before we go live, right now we have 4 gigs of RAM prepared to go up to 8 gig of RAM, which should more than suffice, but yet there's still room to grow with a virtualized environment. Drupal loves virtualization. I'm running for a demo, basically have a copy of our entire server on this laptop for security reasons so that we can demonstrate some stuff, so it's really portable that way. A little bit more information that you can access in our presentation online once it's posted. There are some customizations you can do to improve performance. And that's it for me. Next, Mike is going to discuss the migration process and its challenges.
Thanks, John. Can everybody hear me? Switching mics again. Migration. The big challenge was we had 100,000 pages. We were trying to drop that down to less than 30,000, so getting rid of 2/3 of our existing content. We had many custom applications. TJ pointed on that with some of our CGI scripts, some of our Perl applications. There was not a one-to-one mapping between our new and old templates. We gave our content owners, or content stewards, the option to go with 4 different templates out of the 10 we had. Some of those templates were earmarked for like the home page, but we gave them access to 4. There were 100 different templates out there starting out with this project over those 100,000 pages. So we had to go through and basically map it out, say, okay, which page goes with which template. Not all content was migrated to support existing links. Inconsistent standards were used on old content. Yeah, they were HTML pages. Some of them were 9-10 years old. They were not as current as they probably should have been. The goals: to establish clear ownership for each page, identify who that person is who should be updating that page, educate content stewards on the objectives and use of the new CMS. We wanted them to be comfortable with it out of the gate. Preserve while cleansing existing content. The stuff that they wanted to migrate over, we wanted to make sure that that was a page that they could migrate over, and that we took a lot of extraneous code out of it. We don't want to leave stuff just hanging out there. Eliminate manual entry of existing content. Those two kind of go together, because we don't want somebody sitting there cutting and pasting for 3 months all their content. We want to be able to have them jump right in and start updating. Enrichment of content and hands-on training of content stewards. Again, it involves them in the process. Our content owners, what we did with them. First of all, we established who they were. We basically, this kind of goes with the second one, which is prioritize content for launch. We created, using a script, an Excel file of all their pages. On that Excel file, we also had, okay, do you want it to come over in first round? Do you want it to come over in second round? Or do you want to completely discard it? They made those decisions. We identified the templates to migrate content into. when they came back and said, okay, this list of so many pages, we want that to go over first round. We said, all right, now that you know what content you actually want to migrate over, what template does it fall under? What do you want it to look like? And coupling that, we also explained to them what modules they could have on the side. The modules like the calendar or the contact module that TJ showed you earlier. The technical end, we actually use the URL in those spreadsheets to get their page, to bring that in. Once they identified which pages they were coming in, or what they wanted to come in, which template they wanted to use, we said, okay, well, we know that URL, we're gonna take that one in, and we're gonna assign it with this template. We stripped out any unwanted elements, such as images, inline CSS, JavaScript, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, font tags, center tags. Stripped all that stuff out in the script that we ran across their files. We used Drupal API to import content as a node and set the template. So their content's coming in as a node, and we know what template it's using. We brought in document files referenced within the content. A university has hundreds of thousands of documents out there attached as PDFs, doc files, whatever. We took all that stuff into their implementation, not manually, through the script. We cleaned up links once the content was migrated in. What does that mean? Well, if you're only taking in a third of your content, that means two-thirds of your links to that other content are probably bad. So what we did was go through, also when you're taking in a Drupal, it's no longer that URL that you started with, it's now a Drupal node ID. So what we did was go through, and while we were importing the content, we put a table in our database that had the original URL and the node ID that it's coming in as. When we ran this script at the end, basically what it did was run through the content of each node and said, okay, here's a link, this is what it used to be, here's the node ID we're putting in its place. When Drupal displays that as a page or as a page link, it actually goes directly to that other page and doesn't link to a node ID, but links to that actual page. The results. Sorry? Yep. Yep. They don't see it. They don't see the node ID at all, even if they mouse over it, nothing. Content stewards were involved throughout the entire process. I can't emphasize that enough. That makes them comfortable with the whole thing. It also gets you out there visiting with them and kind of promotes the website as you're going forward. Content stewards now update their own content. Goes directly with the next one. Web development office can focus on developing functionality. Now we don't get an email at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon saying, hey, I need this live by Monday at 9 o'clock. Oh, and by the way, when you call them back at 3:30 or 4 o'clock, they've taken off for the day, and they forgot to give you a key piece of information you need to do that by Monday morning at 9 o'clock. They're in charge of that. That also frees our web development team up to do other programming. We can now concentrate on adding more modules or other functionality. Added bonus, the process results in hundreds of people working with the environment before launch. All those content stewards are in the site. They're tweaking their information, they're going through and they're creating pages, they're giving us feedback, hey, what works, what doesn't work, so we can tweak it before it goes live. Oh, and I guess that's me. Wow, I'm all out. Now a sneak peek.
And while you set that up, sure. You know, I will just add, it took about, you know, we're not in launch next month, about a 7-month process. The RFP actually took longer than getting the site up.
And I do want to just call out Miss Amber Arora here, who is the project manager. She's the one that both championed the technical architecture, and there were a lot of tough conversations. I mean, even Drupal 7, when we won the contract, we said Joomla, because Drupal 7 was so brand new. But, you know, so there were a lot of different things, and she's been working with the content managers and their various function. It's a lot like herding cats, and I call it Dr. Octopus, keeping that, you know, nuclear fusion in bay. So I just wanted to call her out because she didn't get to speak. I really didn't do much work on it, but, yeah, so.
Definitely a team effort. Can everyone hear me all right?
No, we, with the help of one student, he and I met, and actually Amber and he and I met a couple times. We decided how we wanted to proceed with migration, what we wanted to bring in, and he created kind of his own module. So that's how we're doing it, and it works for our static content, it works for WordPress, it works for a couple of the other things we had out there, like Alumnation. It worked very well.
The Drupal 7 API in your PHP code gives you a lot of tools, like to add a node, to do lots of things, so you don't have to write every line of code. So although it was a custom module, and it's one of the very few examples of customization that we had to do, it was it worked really well. So let's give you a sneak preview here. This website is not live yet, but we can give you a demo. First, I'd like to show you basically what was given to us as specifications. This came in the form of PDFs and Photoshop documents. So here I have our Photoshop document. It's just a Photoshop document. There's layers, there's text, but there's no HTML there, there's no CSS. So that has to be taken and transformed by a front-end developer, which in this case was myself. We also had a very talented developer from CompuNet who handled certain key interactive pieces so that I could focus on the theming in general, and he could focus on the some of the dynamic features of various carousels and rotating things. So we got a Photoshop document. We have a couple different PDFs that give us things like wireframes and information architecture stuff, as well as just really flat views of various templates. So you have to be able to transform this stuff into basically running on a virtual machine here on my laptop is our live website. So I think you can agree, I ran this stuff by you very quickly, and you can stop by the CompuNet table in the exhibitor hall to get a kind of a, you know, absorb it, take a little bit more time to absorb it. But I think you'll agree that basically with Drupal 7, we were able to build this really dynamic, really visually impressive website, and it looks exactly like what was agreed upon by our design committee, which was a very intense process with a lot of input from us, and we were able to just basically make that happen. We were able to basically develop some very complicated layouts. I mean, you've got a Drupal 7 makes it very easy for you to plop a video in here and a photo there that's sized automatically for the layout, and the what you see is what you get editor content can flow there, and if you are so inclined, you can add photo gallery thumbnails down here, and it just all kind of falls into place. We've got a couple of modules, a calendar module and a contact us module. This is just for demonstration purposes, so you can see what all our system that we built allows you to just insert there. All of this stuff is interactive. If I click a photo gallery thumbnail, I can go through a nice slideshow. Every image has alt tags and title tags and captions automatically pulled from the database. So that is it. Here's a view that we built basically to handle all of our blogs. Drupal 7 lets you have unlimited blogs. All of this looks exactly like the templates that were approved, so we can delight our decision makers and committees that way. They really feel like what they approved was honored. And that is it. Hope to go live very shortly here. So I'm very proud of what we built, and it was really, truly a very, a real team effort, and happy with the results. So. Any questions?
Very good question.
So we are scheduling the training for the 150 to 200 stewards right now. And what we are doing is we make sure they're able to knowing how to create pages, edit pages, but then at the tail end, we bring in all the content that's migrated for them. And so they start to see, okay, these are the tweaks we have to do if we want to modify anything. This is all before go live. So they're getting a hands-on directly on modifying content before go live. So it's doing a hands-on training, but then they also are getting in tune with, okay, this is what we have to deal with going forward.
Yeah, they can't ignore the responsibility. I mean, there's a lot of images on these pages, and there's not necessarily a lot of images on their old pages. These modules aren't on their old pages. So we can bring the content over, but if you want a calendar, you've got to create your calendar. If you want an image gallery, you've got to create the images. So they're in there now, you know, working through in real time, beefing it up. And another kind of added benefit in my mind is now we're starting to get dozens and soon hundreds of people working the site pre-launch, which is just a wonderful functional and load test.
It sounds like we have 5 minutes left, so we have time for some more questions. Yes, sir. If you stop by the CompuNet table in the exhibitor hall, they can give you a demo. But I will say that some people will complain that in Drupal you have to choose your WYSIWYG editor because there are choices and it doesn't work. As soon as you install the site, it's not there yet. But I think that's a huge plus because there are so many choices. You can choose Yahoo's YUI, TinyMCE. We went with CK Editor. You can totally customize them.
It's a very friendly user interface now. You know, one of the reasons that we agreed to go the Drupal way is there was a key goal here with you know, all these content editors. We needed to pay attention to make it easy for all of them to use. So through the editors available and the other things, it is really now quite, it is user friendly. It's very close to where WordPress, you know, had it. It was a huge, huge Drupal 7 feature.
Also, by design, we took a lot of the CK editor functionality out. We didn't want people putting in their own styles, their own background colors, colored fonts. We didn't want them sizing the fonts up to 64. Yeah, we gave them headers that they can put in. The page title is header one, so we started with header two, header 384. We gave them a paragraph. We gave them, you know, a few other things to use that they can edit their text with. But we didn't go hog wild and let them destroy their site as soon as we launch it.
And you can also, in your content type setup, you can elect to not allow the WYSIWYG editor for certain text fields. So if you want them to put in a block of text and you want it just pure text, you can just turn the WYSIWYG editor off for that and make it so that HTML tags are not allowed. So you really have a lot of flexibility. And you can choose various profiles that are available to your different users so that some users have just a few buttons up here, and your more advanced users, maybe our students, can have like a whole array of. So it's really customizable.
If you're really concerned about how the look evolves, you can do a workflow, you know, so people can, you know, do a draft. It can be approved if necessary by a support, you know, by whoever you do. We're not doing that. We're doing a trust but verify approach right now. So,
any other questions? One in the back. Sure.
Go 7.
No. let me just say that we were that expert. No, we were that expert, and that's exactly what we said to start with. You know, we're afraid of 7 because it's brand new. You know, we're starting in April, came out in January. You know, and we're contracted to deliver a site. You know, even though they're doing a lot of the work, it's us that's on a fixed price contract that have to be successful. So, you know, so we were a little hesitant. We were talking about that yesterday. We made the right choice. You know, there are still some modules that are not out there, but again, choose carefully. And I don't know why you would want to do that today. The benefits of 7 from usability, even functionality perspective, there, and it's, you know, look what we've done. I mean,
the generally accepted wisdom that's out there right now says that if you have a Drupal 6 website, Drupal 6 is still really strong, and you might have some hiccups, so why migrate now? Don't feel like, oh, 7's out, time to migrate. But if you're building a site from scratch and you're not yet using Drupal, I'd say we're at the point where the default answer is Drupal 7, and only if there's some really, it would break my heart to see somebody build a brand new Drupal website in Drupal 6 right now. Because
I'd be happy to share our experience with her, so are you in the interview?
Yes. Yeah, the question is it one big site for everyone or is it multi-site? It is one big site for everyone. What we are using for access control is a combination of Workbench and LDAP. They, of course, log in with their LDAP account, and then we allow Workbench access into their respective roles and areas.
The Workbench suite is built by a company called Palantir. And it integrates workflow, it integrates authorization, access control. It gives you everything you need, whereas in Drupal 6 you had to string together a few different modules, and it's good stuff.
One of the first things you see on this is right up here at the top, it shows basically all the different organizations on our campus. If biology logs in, they see biology.
Workbench is a great reason to go with Drupal 7 instead of Drupal 6. Any other questions?
All right. Thank you very much.